Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, developing and using intuition for health, lifestyle issues, and personal growth. Joining me in our studio in New York City will be Peter Roth, founder and director of the Heart River Center for Intuitive Healing in Manhattan. For many years, he was an intuitive counselor and healer. 38 years ago, Peter co-founded with me the Natural Living Running and Walking Club and has been an officer and director of New York Roadrunners Club and the New York City Marathon, of which he serves as an honorary board member. He is a registered human design systems analyst, and his intuitive practice incorporates many modalities that have helped guide numerous people on issues of health, careers, parenting, relationships, and spiritual growth. Currently, he is working weekly with hundreds of people for the ability to help them manifest their own intuitive skills. Peter is the host of the radio program Energy Stew, heard every Friday at 11:30 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Also joining us in the studio is Lou Anne Panessi. Lou Anne Panessi had a rather standard career in orthodox medicine for 18 years, where she was the head of nursing at Long Island Jewish Hospital. She is an oncological nurse, and as her responsibilities required overseeing nearly 100, more or less, nurses at any given time, she was in the heart of what worked and what did not work. She saw a lot of people, thousands of patients, coming in, none being cured for cancer or other conditions. And the best that medicine could be was in its emergency form. The worst that medicine manifested was in chronic care. It was only when she came to a lecture with her friend at the time to be exposed for the first time to a different paradigm of where intuition, where what we call the placebo effect, really does count. Over the next 2 to 3 years, she worked on herself using principles learned from that initial lecture, and therefore coming to a Tri-State Healing Center, which many of you, thousands upon thousands, visited at 72nd and Broadway. And before that, at 84th and Riverside Drive. All told, about 8 years at those centers. And in that period of time, thousands of people not only improved, but had complete cures and remissions, and to this day are living examples of what is possible. Yes, there were medical doctors, board certified in their field, and holistic dentists and other practitioners helping, but everything started with the value of understanding your life force. Because as many ancients have believed, it is only through liberating and mastering our life force that we're able to use that in our healing process. Hence, today, we're going to see how this actually manifests. We're going to be speaking in depth about intuition. It is apropos to begin with discussing what intuition is from a scientific and psychological perspective and how it differs fundamentally from discursive reasoning. You may recall a book by Dr. Kelly Turner, an integrative oncologist trained at Harvard and the University of California, who has worked with patients who have undergone radical remission from cancer when they were given a death sentence. Dr. Turner wrote that in almost every incident of radical remission she encountered with her patients, relying on their intuition for making appropriate decisions in their healing process, even the U.S. military is starting to investigate the power of intuition in order to help soldiers make quick and better judgments in combat in order to save lives. In another example, there was a study performed by a group of universities, Rice University, George Mason University, and Boston College, that found intuition was just as effective in decision-making as was analytical approaches. Now, we're increasingly learning more and more about our two very distinct operating systems. One is our right brain, along with our limbic and reptilian brain system that is rapid, instinctual, and largely subconscious. The other is our left brain operating, which is slower, analytical, and more or less conscious of the way we operate. Research pinpoints intuition in this first operating system because intuition is rapid and frequently doesn't make any rational sense. So I would ask both of our guests to expand upon this and then address the issue of trust, because without trusting our inherent instinctual guidance, we fall into rationalizing our gut feelings that more often than not lead to poor decisions. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thank you.
Peter, we'll begin with you. People intuit their internal feelings and external surroundings differently. What are some of the ways that intuition manifests itself for certain people, such as aural, visual, tactile?
Well, we have two different kinds of intuition. We actually have our instincts, and then we have a more of a cerebral intuition of knowing. And the knowing is more of an understanding, whereas our instinct is a gut reaction that sends us into an immediate response. And they both are valid. The idea is to balance them, to do your homework, and then to know when it actually comes down to making the choice, your instincts, and research has proven this, that your instincts will guide you more correctly most of the time than your mind. And so the idea is to find that inner buzz that says go for it or not, and it's a spontaneous, immediate feeling, a sense that of on or off, and so for most people, that's the best reliance on intuition and instinct for people in just every day, and all of us should operate that way every day. We can't just go around just living out of our guts entirely, because then we don't know what we're making choices about. So our minds do have to analyze, but we then go to a deeper, more instinctual place. Separate from that are intuitives such as myself, who operate very cerebrally and seek higher guidance. And that really is information that comes through. It's data. And it's not necessarily making the choice. It's more informing the choice. So I like to believe that my, not only my intuition, but the intuition of the students who I teach to use this, is to allow data to reveal itself better, so that we know how to inform the deeper part of us that can react better.
Good, thank you. I appreciate the overview. Just a little background for those who are tuning in for the first time. I grew up in the South in a town called Parkersburg, and just a working-class family. And my mother had a gift, and everyone in my hometown knew this, because every single night, seven nights a week, people would come after dinner, and for several hours to about 9 o'clock, and we'd have dinner early when I was growing up. Generally, dinner was between 5 and 5:30, and by 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock, that 2 hour, people would come. My mother would sit, hold their hand, look in their eyes, and listen to them, and then give them positive suggestions. Never heard her say anything negative. Now, she came from a very large family, and as did my father. So when I would be a kid, and I would come down the steps, and I'd look through the railings, and I'd see this going on, and I would ask her, "What are you doing? Why are these people here?" She said, "Well, they all need help." And I said, "But how are you helping them? You're not a medical doctor." She says, "Each of us has the ability to do something that can make a difference in someone's life. And sometimes just bearing witness, being the loving soul that listens to a person with compassion." But my mother had a gift beyond that. In the South, it is called a sensitive. Kind of visualize a healer, psychic, intuitive, all in one. And I was given that same gift, and it scared me because of what I could see but had no control over. The last thing you want as a little boy is to see things that are not positive and see things happening in the future that then happen. So you go through a process of denying it for years. And then when you're old enough, realizing it's a gift that you can use. being able to guide people by seeing the energy. And everything is in the energy. And hence I've spent my entire life, yes, as a scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology for more than 31 years, but also as a registered dietitian and nutritionist and a clinical nutritionist and counseling people. But starting always with the idea of what are you trying to attain? Someone comes to you as heart disease or cancer or fibromyalgia or dementia or Alzheimer's. What is the object of the exercise? Is it just to give a protocol? If you just give a protocol of the best diet or best nutrients, you will fail because 95% of the people will not stick to it. And I saw that and I understood that. So instead, all of my work is based upon first trying to have an exchange of energy where the person is exchanging negative choices for positive choices. But how can they do that? By stop reacting to the conditioning of their subconscious. We are all born perfect in spirit, is my belief. And to the degree that we are conditioned, positively or negatively, by those who have influence in our lives in our formative years, our parents, siblings, teachers, in-laws, anything and everything that we are exposed to, we absorb as if it's real. And Dr. Bruce Lipton and others have said this ends up creating memories and energies in our cells called epigenetic foundational systems, meaning that when you are exposed to positive energy, you can manifest a more positive and hence healthy choice. Negative energy, it can traumatize you. So that is where the journey begins in the healing process, not just saying, oh, well, here, take these juices, take these supplements, and you'll be fine. It doesn't work that way. In fact, to prove that, I did a study, and I took 500 people. We've done about 42 clinical studies, and this one was on overweight. You had to be overweight, obese, for at least 3 years to get in. And you tried all the diets, nothing worked. Well, one group was given the best possible diet. Another group was given all the supplements that are capable of causing fat to be burned, like the essential fat-burning nutrients. Then another group was given every kind of stress reduction, hypnosis and Tai Chi and Qigong and all of the meditative breathing. Another group was given exercise. In fact, you led some of those exercises in Sunday morning in Central Park. That's how we would sometimes have hundreds of people there. And everything they knew, from power walking to jogging, they got. And the last group of 100 received none of that. Not a single word was spoken about dieting, losing weight, supplements, exercise, stress management. That group was asked, what is the central meaning of your life? Are you honoring it? If you could live your life over where you decided what your values and beliefs should be, would they be different than what you've lived through? And at the end of 6 months, we had about a 92 to 95% failure rate with every single group except that group, and they had a 93% success of losing weight. And that's why, from that day till now, every health support group, every counseling that is done, starts with rebalancing the energy. And part of that is using that life force, what you call intuition, I call life force. And so it's always there because it always knows the answer to everything. But because we've been conditioned epigenetically, our conditioning frequently takes us away from that, trusting it. And the more authoritative becomes the voices in our development, the less likely we are to trust that voice. And so one day, we need help. We need to make better choices. We're smarter than the choices we're making. We're better than the way we treat ourselves or others. And yet we're out here in this wilderness making one bad choice after another and just frustrated. So the idea is to quantitatively get back to trusting the authentic self. And that's the purpose. Now, Luann, when I first met you, you were coming from a highly successful but very conditioned self. You were very righteous in your beliefs. And I remember your attitude was not a positive one, but it was certainly one based upon the certainty that nothing else could exist that was as important, as real, or as scientific or medically accurate as your own. But then over the next 3 years, you did a detox in Texas. You came to the Tri-State Healing Center on a regular basis, sometimes every night I would see you there. You said, you're not going to believe any of this until you could interview the patients in depth. You wanted to see their medical charts. And I said, well, you got to get their permission. So you get the permission of the patients. You'd sit down there with their medical records. And many of these were terminally ill people. And I remember one woman who was a tennis player, had terminal breast cancer, stage 4. And you looked at the records and you came into my office and you rarely did that. And you said, I don't understand this. I said, what don't you understand? You said, she should be dead. She should have been dead 6 months ago. And I said, well, that's based upon your conditioning. You haven't been exposed to another reality. It took you about 3 years till you finally, one day, surrendered the old belief system in order to embrace a new one. And now you're one of America's leading holistic nurse and teachers and counselors. Tell us about the journey of your using intuition and you're using this shift in consciousness to help in not only your own healing process, but all the other people you've been able to guide in the journey you've been on.
Well, as you said, Gary, I started out, we all want to have a feeling of security about our lives. And my security came from the illusion that I had a good job, I had good income, I had a lot of responsibility, and I was very, very skeptical about new information that challenged my beliefs, and I was very cynical. And yet, when I began to do my own unraveling of that old consciousness, that old conditioned mind, I began to witness this sensation, as Peter said before, it's like that gut feeling. I started having a sense of comfort in knowing things that I didn't realize that I actually could know. And when I was interviewing the patients at the Tri-State Healing Center, I was coming in with an edge of how could this possibly be? What's really going on here? And then came this profound curiosity. Because once I was able to see people that in my world should not technically be alive, and yet they were there and they were functioning, I had this incredible feeling of hope and this intense curiosity, and I needed to learn. And that's when I kind of got myself fired from my job, and I immediately went and got myself credentialed. I was like a sponge that couldn't get enough. I remember watching all of your empowerment videos, the videos that back then, and I would watch them over and over, and I would take notes and write questions, and suddenly it opened up a whole part of me that I didn't even know existed. And when it came up, I didn't know who I was. I was terrified because I was used to being angry, righteous, and I was very defensive because in my position as a nurse administrator, I had to be three steps ahead of everybody else. And now that I left that world, I was in a whole different world. And that's when I began my journey of this intuition, of this knowing. And getting credentialed, I worked with some other phenomenal holistic nurses in the areas of biofeedback, which to me was, I was absolutely in awe of biofeedback when I learned that we could actually control our physiology, our temperature, our blood pressure. And then came all the other fields, learning about homeopathy, learning about the energy of food. To me, this was like a whole new world. And since then, I went on to get myself credentialed in Chinese medicine. But that's another whole world of the understanding of energy and the body and how it flows and our inner knowing. And so my whole life since then, for the past 20 years, has been evolving, ever evolving in this world of higher knowing.
For a moment, go back to when you were at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
What was the standard of care that you saw as far as patients coming in with terminal illnesses? Did any of them make it out alive?
No. It's the hospital system is such that it's a corporation, and its interest is the bottom line. And the bottom line is making enough profit so that we can give out our salaries, our benefits, our take care of capital. It's a business. So as a nurse administrator, my job was to make sure I had enough staffing to intercede whenever there were employee conflicts or patient-staff conflicts. And my job was to make sure that I ensured the bottom line, that I had enough people coming in and enough people going out. So the incentive really is not we want to give you the highest quality of life. It's we want to get them in, we want to get them out, because we make more money on new each admission. And we make money on diagnostic testing. Now, I'll tell you, quite frankly, I feel that besides emergency medicine, our diagnostic technology has improved significantly so that we can utilize good technology to get a better medical diagnosis now than we did back then. But that was also a source of income. So we'd get people in, do what we call the million-dollar workup, get all the different facets of testing done that we could, and get them medicated and get them out. And they always come back in again. There's a whole new income when the new patient comes in with side effects from their drugs, with complications from their chronic illness. But never in the picture was someone comes in with a chronic illness and our goal is to help you not just manage it, but heal yourself. We learned that in nursing school, the biopsychosocial cultural approach to patient care. And that's what we were tested on. But when you actually get out into the world of the hospital, it's about the bottom line. It's about how much money can we get in for each new admission, get them in, diagnose them, get them medicated, get them out. Now, I'm talking about general medicine. This isn't necessarily surgery or OB, you know, obstetrics and things like that. So in my world, the reality was when people came in with chronic illnesses, they might come in with multiple readmissions until they finally died. So it was, I felt in many respects as a professional, it was a thankless job because the end game was everyone died. And I remember talking to my father. He used to repair Sears washers and dryers. And I remember saying to him, is there anyone in the world that doesn't go through this horrible torture and this horrible way of dying with side effects of drugs? I wonder if there's any elderly people that are healthy. And he said to me, you know, sometimes I feel like that about Sears washers and dryers. Hmm. He says, but I'm only dealing with the ones that are broken. I'm sure there are many of them out there that aren't. Unfortunately, that didn't apply in my world.
One more follow-up. I remember the time that we were holding a major lecture over at a church. I don't know if, Peter, you were there. I don't know if you were there. It's packed. There are photographs. It's up on the website. It's the largest church on West Center Park West. And we had Dr. Rivisi there to honor his work and how he was helping people with AIDS and cancer. And the audience was packed with people from the Tri-State Healing Center who were long-term, in remission, improved people with every disease imaginable. And here was this wonderful 90-something-year-old man at that time who always thought out of the box. And that was, I was thinking when this was all going on, and I'm watching all these people, over 1,300 people, and I'm thinking, why doesn't the rest of the world know this? I remember you talked about your own illnesses, and I ask you a simple question. If you did not change your life, would you be alive today? Do you remember what you told me?
Clearly not. I was not. I would not be alive because I had a lot of illnesses that if I became a statistic on my own unit, I would have been dead at least 15 years ago.
Tell people what conditions you had that were life-challenging.
Well, I used to drink a lot of coffee because I had chronic fatigue syndrome that I really didn't know until I did my own viral panel at your suggestion. And so I drank 13 cups of coffee a day. Because of that, I had very, very severely cystic breasts and cystic ovaries. I had ruptured ovarian cysts, which were extremely painful. And all of the breast cysts were starting to become precancerous to a point where they already classified me as having some kind of a breast cancer, maybe stage zero, and they wanted to do a bilateral mastectomy, start me on chemo, and so on and so on. And I knew what that road was going to be, and I didn't choose that road. I always suffered with severe acne, and I had pock marks all over my face, and at one point they gave me that terrible Accutane. And I had so many side effects from it, after 3 weeks I had to stop. But they threw antibiotics at me for the acne. And so because of that, I had chronic candida, because that was not a time where people said, well, if you're on antibiotics, you best take probiotics. I wasn't taking probiotics. So I suffered with severe vaginal yeast, and I had systemic yeast. And in addition to that, I had mycoplasma pneumonia. So anytime the weather changed or I was under a lot of stress, I would come down with pneumonia, and I'd be home, and guess what they gave me? Antibiotics. So maybe
you also had hepatitis B.
I had hepatitis B, which all of the practitioners got from one emergency hall patient who was bleeding out, and we all got her blood on us, and it turned out she was a drug user and had hepatitis. We didn't know this till all of us were in the emergency room with hepatitis at the same time. So, you know, I had that whole piece was another reason why I was drinking coffee all day, because I was always so tired. So I had a very toxic liver. I had toxic lungs. I was a workaholic. I loved my work to a degree. I liked some of the people. I didn't like all the responsibilities and the fact that no matter how hard I worked, they expected more.
But at the end of all this, you made a choice to exchange that environment, to exchange the conditioned mind that was basing a lot of your choice upon insecurity, to take this big leap in from your intuition into this void and then rebuild a new life. And today you have none of those conditions. All those conditions are gone, right?
That's correct.
Good. Peter, one of the key issues listeners need to learn if they wish to benefit from intuition is learning to trust its quickness, which can be a momentary spark of insight and catharsis. One study done at a university studying car purchase habits found that the majority of the time when buyers made quick, instinctual decisions on the car to buy, they were satisfied 60% of the time compared to other buyers who studied and researched their choices thoroughly and were only 25% satisfied. So the more analysis a person did, the less happy they were. Now, another study at Tel Aviv University in Israel found that when individuals rely upon their intuition to choose between two options, they were correct 90% of the time. So there are many ways that intuition can benefit our lives and our life decisions. And regarding our health, our relationships, family, work, even our personal, psychological, and spiritual unfoldment, please speak about some of the areas we can apply our intuition and then give some examples.
Well, there are two aspects, what you're mostly referring to is our intuitive instinct and our spontaneous response, which a lot of people don't trust because they doubt what their instincts are. It's almost too abrupt. They don't feel like they've thought about it enough and figured it out, and they need to have all that analysis. And those people who rely on their minds too much, as the research has shown, end up not being as happy as the people who make choices based on more of a gut reaction. So the more people can familiarize their minds with the success of their guts, the more they'll let their guts manage their choices. So a lot of it is just having experience. It's a war between our mind and our gut reaction. And our minds like to control everything, and they won't give up that idea that they're right, and yet they're wrong more than the gut is. So it's really about having enough experience. Once they've heard from us about this, they can learn to live more in that response and perhaps learn to trust it, because they'll see how right it is so much of the time. So that's one aspect of intuition. But the other is where I really like to dwell, because I do this for a living. I actually sit with people, and I look at that energy that they're bringing with them. And I can feel the energy with my hands, with my fingers. I can see and hear. And I go back in time. Energy is timeless. It's in a non-local space, the energy field. It's not like the body, which is very local. So our energy field is very intelligent, and we can take it back in time. So what I do with people when they come to see me, or I actually work with most people on the phone. I have clients all around the world. And I can look at their energy remotely, and I can take it back in time, and I can see the patterns of conditioning from childhood. I can see what the parents were up to. I can see how they treated their children. I can see how the children treated each other. I can see how the whole family dynamic unfolded, so that these people now are living with patterns of conditioning that are sabotaging them. And then I'll tell them the stories that I see about, oh, your father did this and your mother did this, and this is what they did to each other, and this is how they dealt with each child in the family, and et cetera, et cetera. Or even talking about what their parents had done to them. And the people go, how did you know all that? It's amazing. That's exactly what happened. Oh, my gosh. And then I say, well, let's look at why I'm telling you this, because it's giving you the information to understand why you're struggling with yourself because of what your parents have told you and treated you, and the way you've made decisions about life based on that conditioning that isn't helping you today.
As a follow-up on that, what are some of the obstacles people encounter that thwart the development of intuitive skills, and in particular the role and function of the rational mind, the only mind that we're told to trust, and which is counterintuitive, and it's fundamental as an obstacle because people need to overcome this rationality if they're to ever see anything that's deeper or anything more significant. So speak about some of these obstacles, harnessing the rational mind, and also the role of fear as a major obstacle, especially for acting upon the intuitive insights we receive.
Fear keeps us in our superficial mind because, as I said earlier, the mind, the ego of the mind, wants to control everything to manage this fear and thinks it knows best. Once we can get out of the way, and how does that happen? That happens from experiencing different wavelengths of relaxation, of meditation, of yoga, peacefulness, music, of exercise, of love. Experiences of interacting lovingly with people, we can experience different states of mind that allow us to know better, to have a sense of knowing that's much more universal, and it can quiet the mind down, and then we can feel those instincts better. We can trust those vibrations in ourselves that feel more whole, because we're protecting ourselves from not feeling whole. We don't feel whole. And so the mind is in defense of that and thinks it knows better without experiencing all these other peaceful vibrations that actually can open us up to intuition so much better.
I'm going to pose certain key characteristics to both of you. I'll start with you, Peter. These are common to most highly intuitive people, and ask you to further elaborate on them. And what people don't realize is that for all those decades that I was at the Institute doing my research in anti-aging medicine and did over 116 major experiments. If people are not aware of this, the reason a lot of people today are combining rice and beans to get complete protein is the research I did, showing it was the first study ever done and confirmed that all plant materials like legumes, pulses, nuts, seeds, beans, have all eight essential amino acids in varying percentages and varying quality. By combining them, and I provided a combination of 5,000 combinations in normal edible portions, you actually get more usable protein than eating any animal protein. And it was called the Egg Project. But aside from all the nutrition research I was doing, and anti-aging specifically, I did research on intuition and healing energies. And because that was considered controversial at the time, it was done very quietly. And the director knew I was doing it. And he said, just kind of keep it low-key. We're not going to publish any of the results, but I'm not limiting you from doing it. And so I saw the power of this. And the only study that did get published that became a very important study was the healing energy study. And that's been cited many, many times. In fact, Dr. Stanley Krippner and for people in the field of psi research, they would know these names, Lawrence Leshan, Gerald Kessler, who was a former commissioner of psychiatry, Department of Health in New York City. They were in on watching this, saw the results. What I did is I brought in a group of people who claimed that they had the ability to channel energy to heal. Now, okay, as a scientist, I simply said, let's see if we can prove it. So of 50 people who claimed it, six were able to repeatedly, six out of six studies over a two-year period, they were able to get mice to reverse their cancer completely. Then I said, okay, the universe doesn't give us half-truths. They give us full truths. So if they could heal a mouse with cancer, can they cause sprouts to grow faster? And I put sprouts in a leaded room and sprouts in another room, same sprouts, same water, same light, and they grow 300% richer when they meditated over them. So what we found, and one of the people was, there was a Dr. Thomas Kruth, there was a Rabbi Abraham Wiseman, there was a Dr. Morton Jacobs. He was called the chiropractor with the healing hands. He was famous, the only chiropractor in America who was called the healing hands. Well, he did. He succeeded in this. And also a woman who was the head of nursing. She was the department head, Dolores Krieger. And from that study, all of therapeutic touch evolved. Most people are not aware of that because every nursing school in America now teaches therapeutic touch as a legitimate science. What's interesting is where a nurse will learn therapeutic touch as a legitimate accredited science, doctors won't use therapeutic touch because if you tell them that there is a way of channeling energy, the way of helping unblock energy, a way of helping maintain positive energy, they'll say mumbo-jumbo, and yet there's 1,500 studies published in peer-reviewed literature on psychoneuroimmunology. So you have this dichotomy in medicine where you have people doing healing, like yourself or Luann and others, and yet medicine won't even attempt to approach this as if they could do it in the pharmacological model they're using. They're told the only thing that can heal is radiation surgery and pharmaceuticals. And so they cut out something that's completely legitimate to use something that often is the number one cause of death and injury. And we've proven that with the study, Death by Medicine. So anyhow, I just wanted that as a little background because I was studying all this for years and showing that people had this ability. In fact, everyone has this ability. Peter, you're aware of that. It's just they don't trust it. They don't know it's there, and hence they have a tool they could be using that they don't.
And I teach it. And
yes.
I've had hundreds of people really learn how to use it beautifully.
A keen ability to listen rather than ignore the inner or gut guidance they receive. That is one of the that's one of the most common characteristics of highly intuitive people. Would you expand on that?
Well, it's more than listening, it's sensing. And I'm going to give you an example of somebody I was working with many, many years ago who was one of from our Natural Living Club. And she knew that I could feel energy. And she called me on the phone and she said, "My back is out. Can you help me?" And so with my hands on the phone with her, I was feeling the energy of her back, and it was fine. And then I got down to her hips, and I felt her hip being off to the side. And I'm thinking, so maybe this is where the problem is. And she was asking me to help her, so I figured, okay, I won't say anything. And I, just on my own, I shoved the hip, energetically, I shoved the hip back into place. And right away on the phone, she said, "What'd you do?" I said, "I'm just trying to help your back." She said, "No, it wasn't my back. I felt my hip being shoved to the side." And I went, oh, my God. It's amazing how not only can we sense, but we can manage energy in powerful ways.
In the Amazon, when I was studying healing, and I went around the world, I traveled for 5 years studying healing in different cultures to see what we were missing in our very limited model of healing in the United States. There was a shaman, and he was sitting in very shallow water, and you could see the piranha around him. So if you threw in some of this bread that they made out of root, the water would froth up, yet not one ever bit him. But if you went in that water and you weren't that shaman, then you'd be their meal. I don't believe people fully understand the importance of completely living through your authentic life energy. And I want to go to you, Luann, on this. Valuing, and again, this is one of the common characteristics of the most highly intuitive people. They value solitude. They value silence and time alone to incubate creative ideas and thoughts. Nice. I mentioned this to you because at the end of 1 week of a Texas retreat, you were the only person that wanted to leave out of 138. And I came out to the house and you were there with your luggage. And I said, you're going home? Yeah, I got enough. And I said, you hadn't got anything. I said, you tried everything, but you didn't try complete solitude, silence. Are you afraid of having that conversation with your authentic self? Do you remember what happened from then?
Well, yeah, I decided to then stay on. And it was at that time that I really began to realize how toxic I was. And I began to appreciate the power of the training that I had in my intellect and how I stayed there. And I was terrified of going down deep because I didn't know what I was going to find there. And that second week was really when I learned to utterly relax into my own energy. And it was the most profound time in my life because it then gave me the opportunity to not only reconnect with myself every day, but live through my authentic self, not my conditioned mind, needing to please everyone, needing everyone to accept me, needing everyone to recognize me. All that kind of drifted away. It kind of melted away. And I discovered this inner strength that I had. And I began to recognize behaviors in the past that reflected that dynamic energy that wasn't going to stand by and let everything be the status quo. And suddenly I recognized it was always in there. I just never developed it. I never played with it. And now I do.
As a follow-up, what is one of the characteristics that we request people at all the retreats to do?
Well, for one thing, we eat in silence.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge challenge for me and I know a lot
Everyone.
Of other people. Yes.
And how about all the times of sitting quietly, journaling, mindful meditation? How difficult it was for people. And yet the people who finally, later in the week, get how important it is, then they actually, you don't see them around.
Right.
That they're getting, now they're in touch with their authentic self. They have walked in the direction of their fear. And that's what becomes liberating to them. And then you get these remarkable experiences people have. Now, fortunately, we record these. We record exit interviews of people who voluntarily come over. They're not coached. They just, what was your experience? Oh, for the first time in my life, I actually dreamed in Technicolor. I'm there and suddenly this phenomena starts to happen to my body. I couldn't explain it. And we have all these positive things happen. No negative, positive things. That comes through valuing solitude and silence and time alone to incubate creative ideas and thoughts. And also there was a case of just one person recently, a person that just can't shut up, whose mind just pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa, as if just asking 1,000 questions is all you have to do to grow. In fact, it's asking no questions and trusting that you have the answer to your own question. And in America, we expect every question to be right in front of us answered on a screen because we have unlimited amounts of information available, but so few resources we use internally. Peter, one of the qualities I see in people who are highly intuitive may not even realize the power of their own intuition is an eagerness to observe and pay attention to their surroundings and notice when odd things happen to them that couldn't just be coincidence.
I've had a number of experiences like that. One time as a runner, I was on my way to Central Park. This wasn't so subtle. I was putting my foot on the road on Central Park, on the drive, and I heard, "Stop, don't do that." And I stepped back and went, "What? What's going on?" This is before I knew how intuitive I was. I said, "What's going on here?" I said, "I'm here for a workout. I'm going to run." So I put my foot out again, and I heard again, "Stop, don't do that." And I said, "Thank you for sharing, whoever you are, but I'm going to run." And within 4 miles, I came down with a stress fracture. So I wasn't being sensitive to that input. Another time, I was about to get into the car, and I just felt blood all over the car. And I went, "Oh, my God, I'm going to have to drive real careful." But on the way home, we got out of the car with my family, and we got on this alpine slide going down this mountain. And I had an accident, and I needed a lot of stitches in my arm. It was very bloody. So there was another way that I was being shown. And then another time, actually, I was in a train station down at Times Square waiting to meet some friends in the train station. And because we were all going to eventually meet downtown on the sidewalk outside of a subway station. And so I was going to surprise them at Times Square and meet them before they got on the train so we could all end up together. And I'm standing at the bottom of the stairway, and I'm hearing, "Move up the stairway, move up the platform." And I'm going, "No, I'm not. I hear you talking to me, telling me to move up the stairway, I mean the platform, but that defeats my purpose. So why would I do that?" They said, "Because we want you to." And I've learned from those other experiences that maybe I should listen. So I said, "Okay." And then all of a sudden a train pulls in. And they said, "There's a car that's going to open up, the door open up in front of you. We want you to step into the car." And I said, "Why would I do that? I'm going to miss my friends." And they said, "No, you have to step into this car." So the train came in, door opened, I stepped in, and my friends were standing right in front of me. They had taken the train from a previous station. And so I was being guided to perfectly meet with them.
But do you realize how many people today have had these unique experiences, and virtually all, 100% of all experiences that come from our essential life force connecting with a universal force are discounted? They're discounted, trashed, and why are people so afraid? Why are authority figures so fearful that what we are actually connecting to could be something outside of the limited linear reality that they exist in?
And that it's such a limitation because I see these experiences as lessons to show me how amazing the universe is and how much guidance we have, and that everything is being taken care of in so many ways. So these are lessons saying you're not alone. There's this greater consciousness of the universe that is extremely present. So tune in. Tune in. Because when I sit with people and I know all about their history, I can't know about it from my own self. I have to know about it from their self, from their energy fields and their higher selves. And that's what's speaking to me. And so I always see it as a lesson for people to teach them exactly what you're saying, when people sit with me and I know so much about them that within 10 minutes they say, you know me better than anyone else who knows me, and I haven't said a word to you.
But I believe that part of the problem in our society is that we have given the rewards for those who are hierarchically positioned. The more successful you are, the more certain everyone is that they should be deferred to, that whatever their truth is, the absolute truth. And we don't share two truths simultaneously. We only have one truth. So it's a conditioned truth. It's whatever the official truth is. No different than the war in Iraq was due to weapons of mass destruction that did not exist, invading Grenada. We didn't have to. The Vietnam War, the domino theory, we didn't have to. Those who were intuitive were dismissed as those who couldn't be relied upon. Those who were so certain of all the choices were always wrong. Today, if you look at almost the crash of Wall Street, all the best economists and the brightest economists in the Federal Reserve were all wrong. And look at the damage that caused people. So I believe that the more successful a person is in their career, the more they have been given the advantages of being accepted, the less likely they are to appreciate intuition in themselves or other people, and that's why they make so many mistakes. And that's
the dominance of fear.
Yeah, it's fear. But that's why they need to fill the void in their life where they're not manifesting a spiritual life. And if people say, well, what do you mean they're not manifesting a spiritual life? Well, when was the last time we had a person who manifested a spiritual life as a president of the United States? We've never had such a person. Or as a leading politician. We get sociopaths. We get very disturbed people.
That's because of propaganda.
Yeah. We don't get the people who could help us.
Propaganda invokes fear.
Yeah, I agree. Luann, I believe that intuitive people have an ability to pay special attention to their bodies and their feelings and their emotions.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the bases of Chinese medicine is the fact that all of our physical illness is rooted in a broken spirit, and that broken spirit is that connectedness to our beings, our souls. And when that's broken, we immediately go to the emotional body, and that's where all of our emotions come up, our fear, our anger, our anxiety, all of these things come in, our worry. And if we don't know how to process these, immediately that goes down on a progressive basis into our physical bodies, and that's how we manifest imbalance. And, you know, just something that you mentioned before, I think one of the most important things that I learned in terms of my thinking was how to think autonomously. When we're conditioned so that we can be better controlled, whether it's in a religion, whether it's in healthcare, whether it's in politics. It's all about control, and it's all about greed. And that's coming from a very negative energy, and it's coming from a base of fear for sure.
And it's coming from the subconscious, not the intuitive life force.
Exactly right. And people are living from that instead of living from their intuition.
Well, our fear pushes us to block out those deeper truths because it's the ego thinking it can control it. And it watches these superficial egos in the world being powerful and rich and all these things that look successful and are certainly a guise. And so our job is to go to the heart and to understand how we have to own our own hearts and our own sense of where can I be more whole? What do I have to do to create more wholeness? And that can happen in changing lifestyle, as Luann did, changing the way that we eat, the way nutrition that we use, exercise, finding a peaceful space. There are so many ways that most people are dehydrated, so hydration is a powerful spiritual tool as well. There are so many ways to create our wholeness and to feel that greater love and that oneness that is really our entitlement. And most of the animal kingdom of this world lives that way. Humans are our own worst enemy.
We're out of time. Thank you both very much. And Peter, how can people reach you?
Yes, I'm Peter Roth. ROTH, and my center is Heart River Center for Intuitive Healing. And it's the website is heartriver.org. There's a free healing program that people can join. We have classes. I have a medical intuition class coming up. So they can reach me at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748.
Luann Panassi, what's your website?
It's www.metropolitanwellness.com.
Peter Roth, Luann Panassi, thank you. I'd like to thank all of you for listening in, and we look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.